Weatherathon 3000, tomorrow's weather forecast, bad.
Inform the commander that Lord Vader's shuttle has arrived.
Vader, this is an unexpected pleasure. We're honored by your presence.
Yo, G, I'll be there to see why your homies ain't working their booties off.
I assure you, Lord Vader, my men are working as fast as they can.
We be seeing if they get this ride going with 6'7" of black staring down them.
I tell you, this station will be operational as planned.
Well, the man don't think so, and we be cruising down here to check out this ride.
The Emperor's coming here?
Yeah, and he gonna put a cap in your white ass.
We shall double our efforts.
Damn straight. And remember, this be CNN.
Good afternoon, you're listening to 90.7 FM, KALX. I'm Franklin, and this is Berkeley Grox.
That's right, it's a weekly look at the world of science, technology, and their effects on our daily lives. I'm Charles Lee.
Coming up on today's show, Mayan women, roadcasting, and RNA regulators.
In addition, we're joined by Ms. Alice Calapries, who will talk about the quotable Einstein.
Also, we'll find out where post-it notes came from.
So stay tuned for all of this, plus the world-famous question of the week, coming right up here on Berkeley Grox.
Welcome back to Berkeley Grox. I'm Frank Ling.
And I guess that makes me Charles E. How are you doing, Frank?
Awesome, Charles. Awesome.
Because it's all about the science.
It's about the science. Wow. That has a great tagline, huh?
They should use it as a slogan at one of these annual meetings somewhere. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe they did.
So, Charles, do you think we should take our show to the road?
So great on the air, so...
So there's a new technology that could be coming out in the future, roadcasting.
What is this?
Roadcasting is like podcasting, except you take your pod on the road and you can share it with other people on the highway who want to listen to your playlist. And, of course, this is going to be aided by advanced infrastructure like computer networks where you can have all your cars, devices linked together in a wireless cloud wherever you are. But, you know, the applications for this are pretty general, but there's a team at Carnegie Mellon right now and they're using these future networks for... uses like roadcasting.
Well, as long as Clear Channel doesn't take it over, I think we're fine.
Yeah, it's power to the people, right?
That's all I really needed was to share my bad taste in music with all the other people on the road.
Well, I mean, that's a good or bad thing, but the great thing is you don't have to listen to commercials anymore.
Or you could just listen to Calix, where we have no commercials.
That's right, huh? We have zero commercials.
Oh, we should start putting them on. What could we advertise?
The Republican Party?
I don't think they fund shows like ours.
No, okay.
I don't think they believe in science.
So anyways, this is interesting to look at the future, and you can find it on this week's Technology Review.
All right, Frank, so do you have good relations with all the women in your life?
Excellent relations. Nothing happens, though, but, you know, I get along.
You know, you have to be on good terms because it turns out women are powerful.
Wow, indeed they are.
At least they were in the Mayan culture.
What, were they the dominant member of clans?
So it turns out a group of researchers were investigating a particular site in Guatemala, the site of an ancient murder scene.
Like a bloodbath or something?
Among the people that were slaughtered, were they found two women of a very high ruling class, one of which seemed to have been pregnant.
I see.
And it turns out that the role of women in Mayan culture culture 1,600 years ago seems to be very important, because it looks like when people took over a town in the Mayan cultures, they would actually have to try and slaughter the women of the ruling class.
So they were supposedly the matriarchs of these societies.
Right. So it's more implication that the women in the Mayan cultures were very important. Yeah, so be nice to the women in your life. So this is a very fascinating work, and it was an interesting discovery by Dori Rientz-Boudet from the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C.
So, Charles, do you have a hard time getting up in the morning?
I don't think I'm awake right now.
It's all a bad dream, huh?
I think the past 30 years or so.
You must be lying in this Matrix computer, huh?
I think they've loaded the wrong program. I ordered the nice program.
What, the one with the prime rib?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that one, too.
Yeah, well.
But if you really do want to wake up, there may be hope. Some researchers at the MIT Media Lab are working on an alarm clock that basically will get you up and going.
How is this different from any normal alarm clock?
Well, actually, this alarm clock is very much like your kitty. So it's like something that will start nibbling at you, waking up. And then when you get up, it runs away. And you have to basically run all over to find it. And so the same thing with this clock is that once it opens up and you hit the snooze button, it'll start moving around until it hides itself somewhere in your room, and then it'll beep again. And at that point, you have to really get up and walk around to find the clock. And it'll keep on doing it until, like, I guess you kill it.
Well, just what I needed was a walking, talking alarm clock.
So this is not commercially available, but they're hoping to do it sometime in the future, and they're going to call it the Clocky.
So do people normally get up and try and kill their cat?
They're so lovable that you wouldn't, but alarm clock, smash it over them.
It could be quite expensive, I think.
Indeed. I guess if you want to know more, you can go to the MIT Media Lab website.
All right, so how much do you like your RNA?
Well, it does keep me alive, so I guess I really do like it.
Well, it does keep you alive, and apparently can also control the spread of cancer.
Wow, it's also my friend, too.
But it could also be your enemy, because if it goes awry, it lets the cancer go unchecked.
Ooh, but that means I should treat it well.
Be nice to your RNA. This is a particular kind of RNA, not the coding RNA that most people know about, mm-hmm. which translates DNA to RNA to proteins.
Right.
But it's types of RNAs called microRNAs.
MicroRNAs.
And these regulate the expression of genes and proteins.
Is this something that they found recently, or is it? Sure.
Yeah, it's been known for quite some time, but it wasn't really known exactly how much they contributed to the role of keeping the cell cycle and cancer in check.
Right.
So a group of researchers at Todd Golub's lab at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, Mass. Have looked at the expression profile of different microRNAs, and they've been able to show that depending on how these microRNAs are expressed, they can tell what type of cancer a cell is expressing.
So I guess if we know the mechanism a bit more, we can also be able to control some of the cancers from proliferating, right?
That's one of the ideas. Perhaps these could be good targets for drug delivery.
Nice.
But right now, they think it's a very good diagnostic tool because they were able to identify types of tumors that were involved in 12 to 17 different types of very difficult tumors to diagnose, whereas the currently existing method could only pick out one of the 17.
So, excellent.
So this is very interesting, and you could take a look at it. It was published in the recent edition of Nature.
And that's all for this week's look at current developments in the world of science and technology. This is Berkeley Grox. You're listening to here on 90.7 FM, KALX. Coming up, Ms. Alice Calapris joins us to talk about her book, The Quotable Einstein. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Berkeley Grox. Well, Leonardo da Vinci once said that simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. Over the ages, scientists have sought to distill the laws of the universe into a few simple rules. This is best exemplified by E equals mc squared, a relationship that Einstein discovered to relate mass and energy. But he's equally famous for his quote, distilling his insight into science and his philosophy of life into a few simple but powerful words. Well, joining us today is Ms. Alice Calapris to talk about her book, The Quotable Einstein. Ms. Calapies, thanks for joining us on Berkeley Rocks today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Well, this is actually the third edition of my quotable Einstein books. The first edition came out in 1996, and then we expanded it in the year 2000, and this one is even larger than the first two editions. There are a total of about 1,200 or 1,300 quotations by Einstein in this book, and also some quotations about what other people have said about Einstein himself.
And I'm just curious, how did you get started in this project initially?
Well, I got started in this about, 27 years ago in 1978. I worked at the Institute for Advanced Study, and at that time the Einstein Archive was located there. The Institute for Advanced Study is where Einstein worked for the last 22 years of his life. And I was asked to make a computerized index of everything that was in the Einstein archive. And at that time, I had to read almost all the papers within the archive. And so I started noticing how quotable Einstein is, and I started keeping notes now and then when I ran across something that he said that I liked. And I just started putting these quotations into an index card box. And pretty soon I had a bit of a collection. And this only took me 2 years to do the index. And then my cards lay around for until 1995 when someone approached me about doing the first quotable book. And then I added on. I only had about 100 or 200 quotations at that time. And so I had to do quite a bit more reading to gather more material. And then after that, I continued to read and find more quotations, and so we kept updating the books.
So reading all these words by Einstein, what do you find most inspiring about him?
Well, I guess the most surprising thing, probably for most of us, when we start reading about legends, is how human they were. We tend to put people on a pedestal and somehow not think of them as just being plain old human beings. And Einstein certainly was, and that's the newest thing that I learned about him is much about his family life and his other interests besides physics.
In recent years, there have been revelations about Einstein's love life. In fact, some of his letters are now public. Could you comment on that a little bit?
Yes, you're talking about the love letters that were written between him and his first wife?
Yes.
Mileva. There's a book out called The Love Letters. And, Einstein met his first wife in Switzerland when both of them were students. And he was only 17 at his first year at university, and she was 5 years older than he, so she was sort of an older woman. But they fell in love, and they were often separated because she lived in Serbia, which was part of Hungary at the time, and then Yugoslavia. And anyway, you know how the things change over there in the
right.
In Eastern Europe. And when they were separated, they would write love letters to each other, and those were published in a book. But I was not part of writing this book.
Well, what else have you found interesting about the people he worked with from these writings?
Well, you learn quite a bit about the history of physics of the time and the exciting times in which Einstein lived in general, you know, the history surrounding his life. He lived through World War I, during which he was a pacifist, and then he lived in Germany during the rise of Hitler, and then he finally left Germany when Hitler put a price on his head, and as you know, he left before World War II and came to the United States. And, of course, then there was World War II and the atom bomb, and then the McCarthy era, and he lived through all of that. And that was interesting to learn about as well through his letters.
So I noticed in this book there's a section on aging and death. Maybe you could shed some light on some of his thoughts on that.
Maybe we should explain how this book is divided up. Yes, I should say that this book is divided into sections on different topics of what Einstein had to say on various things. There's a section, for instance, on Einstein himself, on his family, on aging, on America, on death, on Germans, on Jews, on music, on pacifism, and so on. And you're asking me about what he had to say about aging?
Uh-huh.
Well, did you want me to read quotations or how he, in general, how he felt about aging?
How in general he felt about aging?
Well, I think he thought it was a very natural part of life. He did not seem to be afraid of aging. I think he thought he was getting wiser, if older and a bit weaker. And one can see in his writings how he started to decline, say, after the age of 70 or so, and he had more and more heart problems and became less vigorous. And he always said, though, that he was ready for death, that he felt that his job on Earth was done, and he seemed to have no fears about dying.
Among all these quotes, is there a particular favorite that you keep in mind?
Oh, my goodness. Out of, you know, there are, as I said, there are about 1,250 quotations, and I guess I liked all of them, or I wouldn't have, well, I mean, there's some that I may not agree with, but you know, it's hard to choose just a handful of quotations from this book, but I can give you a couple of examples on different things. For example, on say on politics or the human political situation, he says, "May we reach a new stage in the life of nations where people will look back on war as an incomprehensible aberration of their forefathers." In other words, you know, he was a pacifist at heart, and of course, he thought war was just abhorrent and, you know, a terrible way to have to deal with politics and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And on teaching, he said, "Try to remember that a dedicated teacher is a valuable messenger from the past and can be an escort to your future." So that there are many others in here. He also had things to say about various individual politicians of the time and scientists of the time and some and friends and also people who aren't so well known. But he's always very quotable.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us on Broken Grok today. Are there any last words you'd like to add about this book or your upcoming work?
No, I've got another book that just came out a few months ago called The Einstein Almanac, which is essentially a chronology of Einstein's life year by year and what papers he wrote that year and what papers he published and a little bit of an explanation of what each paper is about and what was going on in his life at the time he was writing the papers and mm-hmm. what was going on in the world and in the history of science at that time.
Great. Ms. Calabrese, thanks for joining us on Berkeley Rocks today.
You're welcome. It was fun.
And we were just talking to Ms. Alice Calabrese, the author of The New Quotable Einstein. To read more words from Einstein about love, pacifism, science, and death, you can check out her book online at Amazon.com, Barnes & Nobles, as well as bookstores around the country. This is Berkeley Grox you're listening to here on 90.7 FM. In a few moments, we'll find out why photographs fade, so stay tuned. Welcome back to Berkeley Rocks, and now here's a special announcement from the Magic Theater in San Francisco. Together with the Alfred Sloan Foundation, the Magic Theater presents Quantum Leaps, Science, Art, and Creative Thinking on Wednesday, July 13th, 2005. Leading scientists share their experiences and visions with an audience of artists and creative thinkers. Panelists will include Dr. William Hazeltine, retired chairman of the board of directors and CEO of Human Genome Science, Dr. Martin Pearl, professor at SLAC at Stanford University and winner of Nobel Prize in 1995, and also Dr. Ivan Schuller, professor of physics at UC San Diego and head of the UC San Diego Nanosciences Group. Reception will begin at 6:15 with a discussion at 7 o'clock. Tickets are free, but they can be reserved at 415-441-8822. Once again, it's at the Magic Theater, 415-441-8822. All right, and now it's for this week's Everyday Science.
Ever wonder why photographs fade? The answer can be found in Everyday Science. It all starts when a picture is taken. The film is developed and a negative is made. That's when this piece of photo paper comes into play. Let's join it and see what develops. This paper is covered with a light-sensitive emulsion, which contains tiny silver crystals. It's placed under an enlarger. When light shines through that negative and hits our paper, those silver crystals go through a chemical process. The areas touched by the most light turn dark. The ones hit by a little light go gray, and those touched by no light at all stay white. After a few minutes of processing, our paper is covered with a lovely black and white image. To make sure that image stays put, this paper gets a couple of baths. The first stops development. The second dissolves those silver crystals. Hey, wait! All those crystals aren't dissolved. Too late, because now we're in the third bath, where all those dissolved crystals are washed away. After we dry, we're framed and set out for people to admire. Remember those crystals that didn't get a chance to dissolve? Every day, the sun's light is indirectly hitting those crystals. Over time, those crystals grow darker and darker. The photo becomes less and less clear until this lovely image becomes one of many things. I hope this information doesn't fade away too soon. Thanks for being a part of Everyday Science. Everyday Science is part of Bayer Corporation's National Education Program, making science make sense.
And now, my friend, it is Esteban, the Spaniard, with the post-it notes for the week. I like to write little post-it notes, my friend. But why did the post-it note come about? Well, it was a happy accident, my friend. The man will make a super clue. Also good, but it's great enough for an Esteban in the heart of the Spaniard.
I don't like sand. That is rough. It's all over the place. I like smooth things. Where does sand come from? If you know or think you know, email us at grox@hotmail.com. You won't win anything, but you might find something smooth. And that's all for this week's edition of Berkeley Grox.
Make sure you tune in next week for more from the world of science and technology.
If you'd like to contact us here at Berkeley Grox, email us at grox@hotmail.com. For Berkeley Grox, I'm Frank Ling.
And I'm Charles Lee. Make sure you also see us on the web at www.grox.net. Have a great afternoon and stay tuned for more music with your host, the girl in the green jacket.